Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right. Are you ready? Are you cooking? Are you doing all the things? This is coming. I cannot believe that Thanksgiving is upon us. How did this happen? I'm trying to decide. I'm going to roll out of here today and drive down to good old Cannon Falls, Minnesota, support my local turkey farmer, or whether I'm going to support my local self and maybe just take a walk around the lake. Beautiful day. Here's what's happening today. You're going to text me, 651-989-9226, because that's the only way I will be satisfied if I learn what you are making for Thanksgiving. Are you boiling your potatoes right now? Are you busting out your special gravy recipe that you got from your grandma? We are going to talk about grandmas for two segments now because this is the most important thing. I am so excited about this. I know I've had a couple books on lately where I'm just saying, like, this is the best book of the year. That Toni Tipton Martin book that I was so excited about that uncovered 200 years of African-American history. Well, this is the other one that I am just beyond excited about. Pasta Grannies by Vicki Bennison. The Secrets of Italy's Best Home Cooks. You guys, the amount of joy this book is giving me. I have just been taking pictures of pages and texting them to different chefs in town because this homemade, intuitive pasta art is vanishing as we all just sit around and watch YouTube all day. Vicki Bennison had the genius idea of going and meeting the women and talking to them about what they knew, what they know. Just one of my favorite books of the year. And Vicki Bennison joins us from, I believe, the campus of Harvard because she's talking about this book because it's that popular. All the brainy people want to know about it. Vicki, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much indeed for inviting me.
Oh, I am excited. All right. So for people, just how did you have this brainwave? Tell me about this. You were in Italy and then you thought, there's a gold mine here that no one is tapping.
I didn't think quite like that. No, I'm lucky enough to have a home in Italy, and I was researching for a book, trying to figure out, you know, what was new to say about the Italian scene. And I discovered that, in fact, it's nothing new. It's actually something that's very traditional, and that it's only women over the age of about 65 who are still making pasta by hand on a daily basis. And I thought, that's just, well, totally understandable because, you know, we're all busy people and we've all got to ferry kids around and stuff like that. But what a shame. And let's celebrate that and make a record of these women, that generation, that just had to put, had to make pasta by hand to put food on the table.
Because techniques and all of the habits, the ways, the expertise, this was passed down, do I want to say oral tradition? What's the right way to say it? Is it, it's a hands-on?
Yeah, it's a kind of hands-on mother to daughter or granny to daughter kind of thing. Really what happened was that, you know, the grandmother or the mother would give a little bit of pasta to a five-year-old and they were allowed to play with it. And, you know, 6 months, a year later, they'd often be cooking for their family. There's one story of Maria who had to make pasta before she went to school.
That's a very good use of a child. I have children, and mainly all they do before school is complain about breakfast but forget to put their planner in their backpack. But tell us about how you actually did this.
Well, I have a granny finder. Her name is Livia De Giovanni. She's Italian. And she and I work together identifying areas, identifying pasta. And it's her special job to track down women because it's mostly word of mouth. None of our grannies actually volunteer themselves. They all have to be persuaded. And I think it's sort of very brave of them because they get a whole bunch of strangers coming into their kitchens, you know, and opening all the windows and turning on all the lights. And so, can we move this table?
You talk in your introduction to the book about one woman who kind of kickstarted it. And I love the anecdote you say about how, you know, you're making pasta with her. And she was the only person that didn't get covered with flour. Everyone else did. And that just speaks to such a level of knowing what you're doing.
Yes, that was a great occasion with Maria. And she came along with her grandson, who's in his 30s. And the two of them had never actually cooked before. And, you know, they sort of promised each other they would do it again. I don't know if they actually did. But that particular session wasn't filmed. It's one of my light bulb moments where I thought, my goodness, you know, photographs aren't enough. Writing about it isn't enough. It has to be a video to record these women. So YouTube was the obvious place to put that footage, even though I didn't really know what YouTube was 5 years ago.
Well, I don't know that any of us really know what YouTube is.
I'm still learning.
The more we study it, the more it changes. All right, so let's talk about some of this stuff, because some of these pasta recipes, I'm particularly thinking of the flour and water. Like, it seems so basic. But the simpler it is, the more difficult.
No.
No.
No. Well, it can be. I mean, when you start using, umbrella spokes or stalks of wheat to make your pasta, you know, like macaroni-style pasta, then it gets a little bit tricky. You have to have a few hours practice to start making an entire tube, if you like, but it'll still taste the same if you've got a few holes in the, you know, in the middle where the seam is. But there are lots of very easy recipes with the semolina dough and just water, a mixture, and it's, you can make things like cavatelli, where you just get little bits of dough and you use your thumb to scrape it along the tabletop, and hey presto, you've got a pasta. So it's very easy.
So using the because I find that when I try to make pasta, if I don't use egg yolks to kind of hold it together, like, I'm very likely to start getting stuff that falls apart. And perhaps this just speaks to my ham-handedness. But I feel like the simpler ones are more, they just require more skill. They require kind of a knowing how to gauge the stickiness or the lack of stickiness? Am I just totally wrong?
No. It rather depends on the flour that you're using with the egg. So you need to look at... The Italians use something called grano tenero flour. They mean soft wheat flour. It's very similar to all-purpose flour. And the trick is to actually kind of stick with the brand that you've chosen and keep practicing. And because flour behaves differently when it's different weather, different temperatures, that kind of thing. So if you haven't quite got it right, just keep practicing, I think.
So that's not an American way of doing things. We want to pop the top of the can of biscuits and have everything work out okay. But, I mean, I think that's it, right, is that you found the people that didn't just practice for a while, they practiced for 70 years.
Yes. And, you know, I hadn't actually made pasta before I started filming them. So, and I'm now... competent. I mean, I'm not as great as them. I don't have the same muscle memory, but you know, you just got to do it. And it's much easier than bread or pastry because there's no fat or anything like that involved.
Well, I would say it's easier than pastry. Pastry is a bit. And then some of these recipes are ones that I really, you know, have never seen before. Like, just maybe because they weren't considered fancy enough to write down, but like little, you know, fingernail kind of clip off pasta. Like, what's the right way to say? You kind of pinch it off like little, a little bunch.
Yes. So fingernail pasta, that's macaroni di Unge from Sardinia. And it was made by the very fabulous Giuseppe, who's 97 years old. And she's marvelous. She has this terrific twinkle in her eye. And she uses what looks like the back of a nutmeg grater, and that's a very good substitute to make these little pastas that look like raspberries. It's very sweet, easy to do.
And I love the way that it is a little bit of a feminist project here, kind of, you know, looking at these women and saying, like, these women are brilliant. They have done amazing work. Like, they literally are in the shadows at some points. You know, they kind of tend to want to be out of the limelight. But it's like, these are amazing. These women have amazing skills.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I wanted to celebrate older women. We don't see them often enough in the sort of food media landscape. And I thought there was a kind of space for that, for older women, just to celebrate them for who they are. You know, they're not chefs. They're not attempting to do anything chefy. Let's give them a round of applause, if you like.
Let's take a little break here and come back. And I want to ask you about other ways of doing this. I just love this book. So I'm talking to Vicki Bennison. Her book is Pasta Grannies. I'm so mad about this book. It has so much wisdom. It has so much just a picture of life that you wouldn't get anywhere else. And it's a nice coffee table book, too, because you can kind of visit with them. All right, we're going to take a little break. We'll come back here in a minute here with Vicki Bennison of Pasta Grannies. Dara here. All right. I'm talking to Vicki Bennison. She wrote this book, Pasta Grannies. I don't know that I have the words to really do this thing justice. Vicki spent years going up and down through Italy, finding grannies, getting them to talk to her about their wisdom, their recipes, their techniques. She has a YouTube channel. She has this great book, which just has a bunch of stuff that I haven't seen before. All right, Vicki, tell me about you. You have an interesting backstory. How did you tell us about you? Where did this all start? Did it?
Oh well, my CV is very long and varied. I'm now 60 years old, so I've had lots of changes of career, and I spent a lot of time in third world economies doing development work. And it involved projects like with UNICEF and things like that.
But your whole family is very adventurous, right? I was reading the story about your grandfathers.
Oh, yes, yes. So my paternal grandpa, which one was he? I had one that ran away from the First World War. My paternal grandpa, and so he ended up with an uncle who was a governor in a province in Burma, who gave him an elephant, and he spent the rest of the war looking for teak with this elephant, well out of the way of anybody who might report him.
I love that. That's just so quirky and adventurous.
Yes, we've got adventure in our DNA.
And then, so your family has always sort of had one foot out of the country and the world of adventure.
Yes, that's true.
And then you did as well.
Yes. I spent about 15 years traveling around. I had 2 years in South Africa after the end of apartheid. And then I've had 6 months in Siberia. I've been to Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan. It's a great variety of countries.
And then, simultaneously, the great food revolution was launching itself, and we got a generation of rock star chefs and supermodel chefs and all of this crazy stuff, and you weren't into it.
No. I mean, my family have always really been into food. You know, we write letters to each other, you know, listing ingredients and things like that, and meals we've eaten. And I kind of felt that, you know, a lot of food programming is about competition and conflict and drama, when in fact that's not what real life is about, and that it would be nice to sort of have an approach that was entirely different and more reflective of real life, that it's about putting love on the table.
And obviously, if you pitch that to a New York publishing house, they're going to say, no, we want a supermodel who can show you how to make brownies out of beetroots or something. So, but you went your own way. You decided not to listen to the horrible commercial system.
And that's the great advantage of YouTube is, you know, there are no barriers to anyone putting up their stories. You just have the challenge of then creating your own audience. And so nowadays I have 442,000 subscribers. It took 5 years to get there, but I mean, it's a significant amount of people. I'm always very humble. When I actually ended up in Wembley Stadium, a football stadium, and realized that my audience could fill it five times over.
That's amazing.
Oh, wow, that's just so amazing.
So anyone can just go into a search bar, type in Pasta Granny's YouTube, and they will find your channel right away.
They will.
And it's kind of nice. It gives me a little hope for humanity that there's so many people that want to learn from grandmas, not their own.
Yes, I mean, everybody seems to love pasta, but they love grandmothers even more. You know, it gives them lovely memories of their own grannies and even if they didn't have a nice granny.
Well, I have to say,
one.
You know, that after admiring your book so much, the sixth thing I want to do is just do it in Minnesota and just go around and find Minnesota grannies and get their bread techniques and their pasta techniques. Have you thought about doing this in other places? Have you thought about
I would love to do that, yes. I'm actually going to film a granny this afternoon. I'm actually here in Los Angeles, and I've found someone originally from Sicily, I think. So I'm always open to the idea of other cultures, other culinary traditions. It would be great fun. I've also get people writing in saying, you know, I'm from El Salvador and I would really like to film my grandmother's. How do I do it? And I tell them. You know, I think it's the more.
What do you tell them? Do you tell them just get a phone and start doing it, or
yeah,
you tell them something more?
You know, don't hold back. You know, people often think, oh, maybe it's too difficult. Nope, just go out there and do it.
I think that would we have Thanksgiving coming up, obviously, and I think that everybody should. I mean, you learn so much when you ask about these details of recipes because people are carrying a lot of stuff around in their head. They maybe don't think of giving it to you until you ask a bunch of detailed questions.
Yes, I think sometimes grannies kind of shoo people out the kitchen and say, you know, I've got to get on with this, where you just have to hang around and say, stop, how many tablespoons was that?
Yes, I wrote a story once about Somali teens who were getting their recipes from their own mothers and grandmothers, a lot of whom were not literate, did not have, you know, writing tradition. And if they didn't capture these recipes, they're going to vanish in the mists. You know, they wouldn't be there anymore. And I think that's that way. I think a lot of us have, even parents that grew up, you know, cooking with Julia Child, they have added their own, you know, a little pizzazz as the years have gone on.
Yes.
And if you don't get that pizzazz, you're not going to get it.
It's very true. Yeah, and I think inevitably if you happen to have, you know, Italian heritage or something, that your recipes will be different because the ingredients are different. So inevitably recipes get modified, and that's not a bad thing. It's still your family's pizzazz, as you say.
And you, in Italy, you find, I mean, that's the thing about Italy, is that you know, every 20 miles is like a whole other food scene.
Yes. And they're adamant that theirs is the only one that matters.
Yes. They're adamant there, and that the village, that the next village over is always like, full of crazy people. Like, that's the thing, is that you're in the island of sane people. If you go 20 miles in any direction, you've just fallen off the earth, and I love that.
That's very true. And I think with, you know, pastas change and the names change every 20 miles. And I think that's about, pasta is actually a team activity. It's a group activity where women would get together and have a really good gossip. And I think that's one approach to pasta making is to remember to invite your friends around and help them make supper.
I went to a lecture the other day at the Swedish Institute from a Swedish food historian named Richard Tellström, and he was talking about how in Sweden people would get together once a year and make all the bread for the year, and it would take a week, and they would make those hard breads that they would then suspend from the ceiling. And you just think about what that must have been like, the amount of information you got. You know, you didn't see people a lot, and then all of a sudden you just got a straight week of hanging out. It must have been quite nice.
Wonderful. What a great way to spend time.
Yeah, exactly. He said that it was the first you do the harvest, which obviously is an all hands on deck situation. Yeah. And then you got to get the bread ready because, you know, it's very hard to get the oven hot when it's freezing cold. Anyway, I think that all of these ways of cooking are very much kind of ghosts in the machine of our culture and our thinking and our way of being. And we maybe don't even know they're there until we ask, right?
Yes. So that's the mission for the week.
The mission for the week, it really is. If you can ask your grandma about the exact dishes. And sometimes you get an answer that you don't expect, and it's just an irritated answer even. It can be very enlightening. I remember when I was in college, and my grandma had my dad very late in life, and so she was quite a bit older than, I think she was in her 90s when I was a kid, and I remember just trying to get access into her life. We had grown up in New York City in the Lower East Side, and I was asking her just from a Philip Roth book I was reading for school. I was like, Grandma, you know, did you buy food from push carts? And she was so disgusted. She was like, we would never, our family. Oh, what have people been telling you? We, you know, and it just gave me this insight into, social class in the ghettos of Lower East Side, New York in 1910 that I would never have gotten otherwise.
Yes. Social aspiration.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yep.
What have people been telling you? We didn't buy food off push carts. But that's, we have so many food traditions and, three generations long. If you don't grab them, they're gone.
Yes, it's very true. And I think that's the case in Italy, is that it's changing. People still kind of take nonna's cooking for granted. And it's kind of changing without them actually noticing, I think. It takes an outsider to see that because it's such a local, regional attitude to food. Yeah,
and you get used to everything being available all the time. You get used to tangerines being available all year. You get used to avocados, everything that's a market tries to spread and go everywhere because everybody has their, 20% increase targets that they've got every year. And so that means that tangerines have to increase and everything has to increase. But then it ends up crowding out other stuff.
Yes, I think that's another thing about Italian cooking is its seasonality. And the majority of our grandmothers still have vegetable gardens. So they're forced into being seasonal with their vegetables and their pastas and things like that that go with the pasta.
And that's why they're not so anxious as the rest of us.
Okay.
Oh, Vicki Bennison, you have done a service to culture and cuisine with your Pasta Granny's work. I am maybe try to steal it at some point from you and find a granny around me. I love this book. It is so terrific.
Thank you very much indeed.
Oh, thank you. All right. This has been Vicki Bennison. The book, the YouTube channel, the whole phenomena is Pasta Grannies. It is a joy. All right. Have you ever asked your granny something about food and then they gave you a surprising answer? Text me, 651-989-9226. We're going to have plenty of time for an Ask Me Anything today. We are going to do recipes when I get back. Do ahead Thanksgiving so that you have a chill time later this week. And also tell me about your granny, 651-989-9226. Or actually, you can call in too, 651-989-9226. All right, what are you cooking? Are you getting your potatoes boiled? Because you can do that in advance. You don't have to do that Thursday morning. You don't have to get up at 3 a.m. to boil your potatoes on Thanksgiving, because I, right now at WCCORadio.com, have my top five do-ahead Thanksgiving recipes. It is blowing up the internet. So the first thing you need to know about the make-ahead mashed potatoes is that you need so much fat. That is what makes the whole thing function. You need butter. I got the Pioneer Woman's recipe up there. Love the way she does this. She uses cream cheese, and butter. That's so many things. And potatoes. And then you kind of mash everything, mash, 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 press it into a pan. Then you heat it up that day in a casserole. You don't want to be messing around with peeling potatoes on Thanksgiving. You don't have that kind of time. You're a happening party person. I also have a do-ahead green bean casserole. All right, so this is a true fact. I will swear upon some Bibles for you that frozen green beans are better than canned, better than fresh. I know, I'm a fresh vegetable person. For the casserole, the classic, frozen works a lot better, I gotta say. You can do everything but put the little crispy onions on. Yeah, cranberry sauce, that's an easy one to make in advance. All you need is a bag of cranberries, cup of sugar, and then a juice of your choice. You can use apple, you can use orange, pomegranate, you do you. I put some candied ginger in there. Chop, chop, chop. Very nice. you can do your stuff, and you can't do it tons in advance. I don't think you could do it today too easily, but you could definitely do it on Wednesday. Get that all in a pan, ready to bake. And then this is something you can do today, and maybe you should. How about doing a mulled punch for Thanksgiving? How about you get some of that fancy holiday tea, boil it, cook it up with some sugar. Then you have a holiday tea syrup. And then on Thanksgiving, get out your punch bowl, your ginormous punch bowl. You're putting a tea syrup, maybe some vodka, some sparkling wine, juice some lemons, dump that in there. Now everybody shows up. Look at you. You're Martha Stewart. You're the fanciest person in the world. That's a good Thanksgiving. So all these recipes, they're up at WCCORadio.com. We're going to come back. You want to talk to me about things you have learned from your grandma? Things you want to learn? 651-989-9226. Dara here. All right, we're talking Thanksgiving. We've been talking about grannies, the wisdom of grannies. You got to get your wisdom from your grannies because they're amazing. All right, Jonathan, why don't you read me some of these texts? I can't see them because of a screen thing, but you can.
So I got a couple of texts here. First one talking about, there is a question for you. What do you think of oven bags for turkeys?
Oh, I think they're an unnecessary bunch of extra stuff. I think that baking a turkey, roasting a turkey, it is not that hard. I think people get a little worked up about it. I don't think you can just make a little tinfoil tent if you feel anxious about it. Save yourself some money. So I don't know. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I just feel like save your money. You can do this without it. You'll be okay.
Okay, and here's one referring to the grandmother cooking that you've been talking about. Unfortunately for us kids, my grandma was forward-thinking, and her mantra was sugar is poison. So the only treat that they got at her house was whole wheat peanut butter raisin cookies. And so she says, now I know 60 extra pounds later, she was probably right.
Your granny was not only was she on trend, not only was she a visionary, she could probably start a cookie company today that would slay in the marketplace. So, yeah, sugar, it's bad for you. Well, a little bit of sugar ain't no thing. A lot of sugar is pretty much the root of all of our national obesity ills today. You're not alone. It's delicious.
That's all the text we have now. We do have a couple of callers on the line.
Bring it on. Let's right. hear.
We got Diane from Edina on the line.
Diane, welcome to the show. Hi.
I've got a question. I have a Jell-O recipe that I cannot find anymore, and it's so old that the measurements are gone. But it's raspberry Jell-O, 7-Up, cinnamon, candies, raspberries, and raspberry Jell-O. Do you know it at all?
What do you mean by candy?
Those little cinnamon candies?
I don't know this at all. I know nothing about it, but I can look into it. I have the wonderful Lise Fitback Dean from the Star Tribune recently gave my daughter a vintage Jell-O cookbook, so I'll go home and look in that. That sounds, I have to say, it doesn't sound delicious. How many cinnamon candies? Like just for a garnish or a bunch of them?
No, you melt them so you get the cinnamon flavor. And so you add 7-Up instead of water to the Jell-O, and you cook the applesauce, and then you add the Jell-O. And then you put 7-Up, or you've already done that. Then you put the cinnamon candies to melt them, and then you put that in your mold.
Well, I like the sound of it. Anybody knows anything, find me on Twitter. I'm at Dear Dara. Find me on Facebook, Dara.Grumdahl. And Diane, if I know anything, I'm going to tell the whole world on the radio here. All right, thank you.
Thank you for helping. I'll look for it on the internet.
Okay. Bob, I hear I've got Bob on the road.
All right, three things now. People need to use honey instead of sugar.
That's a good idea.
My grandma did it, man, and my grandma was never wrong. Another one. What's wrong with putting stuffing back in the bird? Number three, throw the microwave out the window. Y'all have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. Well, I got to say, the whole throw the microwave out the window, that's an idea that's kind of growing in popularity. I know people that are feeling like they don't want those things in their houses. One of the more visionary food people I know just redid a kitchen, and she doesn't have a microwave anymore. So that might be the future. There's nothing wrong with putting the stuffing in the turkey. The problem is that it takes such a long time because the heat starts on the outside. That's how an oven works. Not a microwave. And then it goes in. So first it cooks the outer inch and then the next inner, you know, it just keeps, that's how heat works, radiates in from an oven. And then the stuffing is in the middle. So sometimes people feel like, well, it's not getting cooked when it's in the middle there. But I have no dog in this fight, in this turkey fight. I am not against it. I will say the only thing I do like, now I suddenly realize I do have a dog in the fight, and which is that the crispy bit at the top of the stuffing tray when the stuffing is just baked, that's delicious. So don't get that when it's inside the turkey. All right, I got a question about deep fried turkey. What do I think of all the deep fried turkey situation? I think it's fine. I think it's a bit dangerous. I think that the difficulty of cooking a turkey is kind of overstated. But if you're a gear guy and you want to stand in the backyard and you want to have a big flaming thing of oil and you keep the pets and the children away from it and have a beer, that's a good way to spend Thanksgiving. I support that. So, I don't know. Fried turkey, I think that turkey is not that hard to do, but you want to do it, comes out delicious. It's a fun thing to do with your time. I got a kind of a family drama question. Mexican Thanksgiving, some of the people in the family are advocating that everybody should make like things along that theme. Put chipotle peppers on the outside of the turkey, and other people are angry and they don't want to do it. Well, Dara, family therapist here, I'll sit down with you. You know, I kind of think that if you're fighting about the theme of the Thanksgiving, you're probably not fighting about the theme of the Thanksgiving. You're probably fighting about other things, about like who mom loved more or why somebody always gets their way and somebody else doesn't. So I am not going to weigh in as any good family therapist does it. I'm not weighing in on the virtues of putting some new peppers on the outside of the turkey. Why don't you sit with your feelings and figure out why you're so angry at each other and your family? I know that's a kind of annoying answer, but I can't do anything about it. Not from here. Not at less than $90 an hour when I come to your house and sit around. That'll be fun for everybody. I got a question about wine. What wine should we serve at Thanksgiving this year? All right, I got good answers for this one. It's the Beaujolais Nouveau. So the new wine, the first French wine that got picked 6 weeks ago, just right 6 weeks ago, not that long ago. You may have sour cream in your fridge. It's that old. So just 6 weeks ago, they've rapidly get it through the process. It's very juicy. I love the Beaujolais Nouveau because Thanksgiving is a harvest. It's all about the harvest. And this is harvest wine. It's fresh. It's lovely. You can find the good Beaujolais Nouveau, the new stuff. Most stores, Henry & Son is sort of a favorite of mine right now. It's right by where the Minneapolis Farmers Market is, the main one on Lindale. Solo Vino in St. Paul, they always have great everything. So Beaujolais Nouveau is nice. If that's too juicy for you, then I think you could do a Riesling. Riesling is always a lovely Thanksgiving pair. It goes great with turkey. So something white, something a little gingery like that. I like a Washington State Riesling for budget reasons when you're, laying in a case. You could do a Zinfandel red, because it's very inky, thick, like a nice intensity. Or you could do a Pinot Noir. I like a kind of an Oregon Pinot Noir, something a little funky. That can run you some money, though, so think about what you want to spend. Beaujolais Nouveau, though, I think that's just the no-brainer. And you don't really want to be still drinking it at Christmas. You kind of want to celebrate it and then move on with your life. And no better time than Thanksgiving. It's just been out for a few days. All right, so what is happening in our lives next week? Get it? We're down in the Cambria Galleries. We are broadcasting live. We'll be talking to the lovely ladies who make mittens and jewelry. We'll be looking at Cambria countertop cutting boards. Will I remember to buy one this time? Maybe they have a little cheese board. It's fun. So there will be free coffee, free hot cider, cookies, all those kind of good things. You should come. Till then, I hope you have the happiest Thanksgiving. I'm looking forward to it myself. I may drive down to Cannon Falls to the Ferndale Turkey Fest. Go get myself a fresh turkey. So till then, tell your best friends to come over because you need help getting rid of the turkeys in your life. And I hope you have the greatest pies ever. And I will meet you here next week on Off the Menu.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.